Hi, I'm Luke Dennis, the Development Director at WYSO. We are happy we can deliver these programs to you, people who listen on the web, and we rely on you to help us pay for this service. So at our website, wyso.org, click Support This Station and help keep these services coming. And thank you.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Tom Franklin and Beth Ann Fenley. They join us on the telephone from beautiful Mississippi. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
I think the last time I talked to Tom, I had him on the program for his novel Crooked Letter, and he told me that the two of you were working on this project, and it's finally come out. It's called The Tilted World. How did you decide to write this and write it together?
Well, Beth, do you want to answer that one?
Well, sure. We actually wrote it initially under accident and duress. We didn't plan on writing a novel together. What actually happened was we wrote a short story together just kind of as a little lark, and it was about the flood of 1927, and we published it in an anthology, in a magazine. It got picked up a couple other places, so it had some legs, and Tommy's agent, who coincidentally is married to my agent, saw this story in the magazine and called Tommy and said, "You never told me about this story." Tommy said, "Well, what's there to tell? You know, it was just a little one-off, you know, accidentally co-written, tossed-off story." And Nat said, "No, it's not. It's your next novel, and you and Beth Ann are going to write it together."
Wow.
At that point, I had to jump in and talk her into it. She was not, Beth Ann was not at all interested in writing a novel. She loved to read novels, reads them all the time. But, you know, I'd always sort of jokingly said to me, I would never lower myself to write fiction. Because the truth is, my agent, Nat, has been trying to get Beth Ann to write novels since 1998, when he first read her poetry, a lot of which is quite narrative. He's always said, "There are novels in you," and she's always said, "No, there aren't. There are just poems." So finally, something like 20 years later, you know, he's proved right.
Yeah, that's right. It did take a little convincing, but Vic, I have to say, the process ended up being surprisingly fun. We wouldn't have guessed it, but it was fun to write with Tommy. Writing by yourself is kind of lonely, and you're just alone in a room creating something out of nothing. And this time, for the first time, the two of us were in it together. I was working with my best friend.
So how did that work? Was it like handing off the baton? I mean, what was the process like?
Well, Beth, you answer that. I'm going to get monkey for him, okay?
Okay. Well, it started with something that will probably make sense, Vic, which is there are two point of view characters in this novel, and one is a female bootlegger, a character named Dixie Clay Holliver. She got married at a young age to a man she didn't know was a moonshiner and furthermore didn't know was a philanderer and a kind of evil person. And she wanted to become a mom and got married and lost a baby to scarlet fever. And her life was just so empty without companionship. And she ended up taking over making the moonshine and actually got really, really good at it. And during the flood of 1927, when everyone could tell the levees were going to burst, but no one knew where, people started setting dynamite on the levee and sabotaging the levee to blow the town on the other side of the river to save their town. So the government started sending National Guards and a whole bunch of people to the flooded region. And so our male character, Ted Ingersoll, is one of the people who has been sent there, and he is a prohibition agent. And on the way there, they accidentally they come across a store that's been looted, in which there's three dead looters and one live baby. And they get to town, and they need to unload the baby. And Ingersoll hears there's a woman who's lost a baby with scarlet fever and gives it to Dixie Clay, not knowing she's a moonshiner. So that's the setup with this imminent flood. And we had these two point of view characters, so we thought, well, Tommy will write from the guy's point of view, and I'll write from the woman's point of view. And we'll alternate chapters. And initially, it just wasn't working that well. It was going really slowly. We couldn't quite sync up. Tommy kept being sent on book tour for Crooked Letter, Crooked Letter, and when he'd get home, he'd just have a day or two.
Big, listen, what she's not saying is this. We agreed that she would write Dixie Clay and I would write Ingersoll, and we went off on our separate into our separate offices, and she went to work and wrote Dixie Clay, and my nightmare was that she would have her half done, and I wouldn't have any of mine done. That's what happened. She finished her half, and my half remained unwritten, at which point we then began sitting together back in Beth Ann's office. She called it dueling laptops, working together side by side. Huh. And at that point, the writing for me, anyway, really got going, because suddenly I was not alone and unable to work. I was with her, and she had a lot of good mojo going, a lot of good traction.
Hmm.
She was in the zone, and that bled over into me, and so we were able to write my half in that fashion.
Okay, so we're in Hobnob, Mississippi. It's right on the water. The levees are being built up. The water keeps rising. This is a horrific flood, probably the greatest natural disaster in American history. A lot of people don't even know about it. And here we have this moonshiner, Jesse, who's kind of the villain. He's kind of the evil guy, married to Dixie Clay, who is actually making the moonshine. Now, Jesse's more of the marketing genius. And then we've got these two guys who show up. They're government agents, but nobody knows that. They're disguised as levee engineers.
That's right.
And there's been some missing revenue agents in the area, and that's why they're there, isn't it?
Yes. They're there to try to find out what happened to those previous guys, and then while they're there, just get caught up in flood relief and trying to help out, while also trying to find out what happened to the previous revenue agents.
And this is the height of Prohibition, of course.
Right, right. It is indeed.
And Jesse.
So that means, that means, of course, that there's plenty of moonshine around. It being the height of Prohibition.
Mm-hmm. And Jesse, he's quite a character. He's a dandy, and he's a real mean piece of work, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's also funny and charming. So, I think we didn't want a character who was too easy to hate. I mean, he is detestable, but, I think with his humor and his ability to, kind of make magic happen and succeed in business and, everyone in town feels his charm and his charisma. So then that, of course, is what Dixie Clay had felt initially when she met him and married him too young without knowing him well enough.
And Dixie sits out there by her stills and mourns her baby who died of the scarlet fever. And then suddenly this new baby just turns up as if from heaven. And I think that the bonding scenes where she's connecting with this baby are some of the sweetest things that I've read in a long time.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you, Vic. Well, as you heard when we first got on the phone together, we have a 2-year-old running around the house, and I confess he provided some of the inspiration for the baby in the novel. Tommy and I thought we were done having babies. Our kids were 10 and 6, and they were in school all day, and we thought, oh, we finally have lots of time to write, and lo and behold, a new little person came into our life, and while it certainly disrupted our family in certain ways and used up a lot of our writing time, it's also true that, I, of course, just fell in love again with this new baby and was thinking about Dixie Clay falling in love with her new baby, and it was so awesome in a way to have an infant to look at when I was writing about her love for her infant and to re-immerse joys and physicality of motherhood in the way that I imagined she would.
Hmm. The book is The Tilted World. Tom Franklin and Beth Ann Finley wrote it together. They have their lives together. They're married, and join us from Mississippi on the telephone today. I really like this character, Ingersoll, too. He's a very interesting guy. This baby meant a lot to him because he's had a tough background, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's an orphan also from Chicago. Never knew who his parents were or why they got rid of him. And he wonders about this. And so I think that's one reason that he bonds so thoroughly with the baby. He just cannot leave this baby. And will only leave the baby with a good home. In fact, he finds an orphanage and decides that the orphanage isn't good enough for the baby. And only when he sees Dixie Clay does he feel, I think kind of instinctively, that she's the right mother? You know, of course, had he known what her vocation is, he would never have left the baby. And that, of course, comes in later.
There's also this wonderful bond between the other revenue agent. Ham and Ingersoll went through the war together, and these guys are really connected.
Yeah, it was fun to write about male friendship, and sometimes I think male friendship isn't given as much attention as female friendship. I think we have cop movies, buddy movies, but, you know, kind of beyond, you know, fart jokes and you know, bailing each other out of jail, like, what models do we have of men who have a long history together, who have gone through tough times together and would sacrifice for each other? And when we thought about Ham and Ingersoll serving in World War I together and now becoming these prohibition agents together, we knew that they had the type of history that really desired and would be worthy of a fuller treatment.
We had Bill Bryson on the program recently, and he's just published a nonfiction account of the summer of 1927. And I mentioned to him that I just read another book set in 1927 about the Great Mississippi Flood, and he was absolutely astonished.
Well, that's awesome.
He couldn't believe it. Two books in a row about 1927.
Yeah, it's been you know, left out of history for so long now, and all of a sudden, in that weird zeitgeisty way, there do seem to be several accounts or a bit of reinterest in the flood. And of course, we've been working on this book for 4 years, and I'm sure Bill was working on his for 4 years, and then they came out almost at the exact same time. It was kind of fascinating.
So you were aware of that weird coincidence then?
Only shortly before his book came out, when we saw it advertised.
Uh-huh. Well, Herbert Hoover seems to be the bond between these two books. Herbert Hoover, I really never knew about his involvement with this flood, but he was really using it as kind of a springboard to the presidency, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. In World War I, he helped feed the starving Belgians, and he got a lot of attention for that. But he knew it was too far away, and he actually said, "I need a disaster closer to home."
Hmm.
And then can you imagine the flood? So he gets put in charge of the flooded region. He gets put in charge of flood relief. And he predicted, accurately, of course, "I will ride this flood all the way to the White House."
Oh, my.
And his handling of the flood was skillful, but his handling of the media was genius. And he immediately started claiming that, you know, everything was in control and people were okay and not that many people had died. And, you know, he was one of the great kind of manipulators that we see so much in politics today. But I think at the time, he must have been one of the creators of that habit.
I think a lot of our listeners probably aren't aware of the scope of this disaster. Wasn't it like a 200-square-mile area that was underwater?
Yeah, it was crazy, Vic. When the water burst the levee, the giant earthen bank built on either side of the river to contain the river, when the water burst outside of Greenville, Mississippi, Good Friday, 1927, the water came through with twice the force of Niagara Falls. It was a wall of water 100 feet high.
Oh, my.
It scooped out the delta for 60 miles, and the water ended up flooding a region the size of New England. A million people lost their houses. And what's interesting is, you know, I'm originally from Chicago. I had never heard of this flood until I moved to Mississippi when I was 30.
Mm.
And that was part of the reason that Tommy and I ended up becoming fascinated with it. How could there be this giant, giant thing that changed America in so many ways? Because of the flood, we have FEMA. Because of the flood, we have a large part of the African-American migration up to Chicago with the blues. You know, because of the flood, Herbert Hoover was president. All these ways that life was changed in America, and yet I had never heard of it. And partially it was due to Hoover's machinations, and partially it was the people affected were poor Southerners.
That really is amazing that it caused that massive migration north, particularly to cities like Chicago, and took all those blues artists and jazz players with them.
Right, that's exactly right.
When I was reading it, I admired the fact that you were able to build tension on so many different levels. You had the levees swelling, about ready to be bursting, and these guys frantically stacking sandbags, and then there's the fear of saboteurs, and then you've got the whole personal drama with this Ingersoll trying to figure out what he's going to do after he realizes the woman he's given this baby to is a bootlegger, and that's just not right.
Well, Bethany and I both love novels that are full of tension, you know, but we also love novels that that take care with the language. So that's what we tried to, you know, to come up with here. And, you know, and you know, of course, I've written novels before, but then never had. But she had written, you know, long narrative poems. She had written nonfiction. So she was obviously no novice. And, what she brought was just this incredible language to, you know, to an already fraught story. So, you know, I just think that she made the language just sing throughout. It's really beautiful language in this thing.
I know the two of you went out on book tour in October. When you did those events, did you do some joint readings? Did you trade off reading excerpts from the book? How did that go?
Well, we both, you know, we had done a couple of things. We read a couple of scenes where we can, where Ingersoll speaks and Dixie Clay speaks, and I do his voice, Beth Ann does her voice, and Beth Ann then does the main narration. Or we read a scene about the flood where we just switch off every other paragraph or every couple of paragraphs like that, so that it's both of us reading, but, you know, from the same point in the book.
Oh, how do I get you to do that? How do I get you to do that on the radio? I know you weren't prepared. I'm just springing this on you. Could you do that?
Oh, Lord, I've got to find one of the books. Oh. Where the books are.
Okay, no worries. This really is a wonderful story, and it's one of my favorites of the year. It's The Tilted World. Tom Franklin and Beth Ann Fenley wrote it. With this novel behind you, would you ever consider writing another one together?
I would. Beth Ann might not, being that she did much more of her, you know, than her share of the work on this one. She might say absolutely not, but I would say yes.
No, I would too. Vic, I promise you, it was fun, and it was fun to see someone else's creative process up close. And, you know, when we did our dueling laptops and we were kneecap to kneecap in my little office, just spending that time together and throwing out ideas and letting them lead us to new places, it felt really exhilarating and vulnerable and risky and different. And even going on book tour, it was complicated because we have three kids and we had to fly in different relatives to stay with them. But it was also fun because in the past, one of us has been on book tour alone in the hotel room eyeing the minibar. You know, the other's been home with the three kids, both of us feeling sorry for ourselves. And this time we were together in the hotel room and going out to eat and reading in front of lovely audiences. And we had a really good time.
We sure did. So, yes, we'd love to do it again. We just have to hope it works.
You're also very busy with other endeavors. I know that the two of you are very involved in the academic world.
Yes, we both teach here at the University of Mississippi in the Master of Fine Arts program. So we're working with undergraduate students here in writing classes and also with graduate students from all over the country who've come here to study writing with us. I direct the program, and so technically, Vic, I'm Tommy's boss.
Well, you are married, so you're his boss anyway, right?
Yeah, well, good point. It's redundant at this point, I guess.
Tom, I notice you're not saying anything.
Well, I'll let the boss let me. Can I say something, boss?
You have permission to speak.
Yeah, I actually love, you know, it's wonderful to be so close to Beth Ann. I mean, you know, honestly, besides living together, being married, having the kids together, working together, we now have, you know, we have this writing in common. So it's really a good thing we get along and like each other's company because we're in each other's company a lot. But as far as the job goes, it's terrific to teach together like this. It's really, it's fun simply because we just agree on everything.
I think of that area and that institution, the University of Mississippi, as a real mecca for writers.
Yeah, it is. You know, we still have Faulkner's house here, which has been turned into a historic home that people can tour, and a lot of tourists come here. And there's, you know, some Faulkner relatives and friends still in town. And, of course, you know, John Grisham and Barry Hanna and Larry Brown, and there's a giant crop of new writers. There's always, you know, people in town here who have a manuscript in their backpack and would love to ask you to read it.
Mm-hmm. And Square Books was recently voted by Publishers Weekly as the best bookstore in the country. So that's no small thing. And it has, on the same town square, Off Square Books, which is a youth and remaindered store, which broadcasts every Thursday, Thacker Mountain Radio, which is a live radio show which has each week readings as well as music. And it's really a fun kind of community-binding event. We all try to go to it every Thursday if we can. It's always packed and standing room only. And then on one more street of our square is, or one more corner of our square, I should say, is a kids bookstore, Square Books Jr. So on this little town square, there are three bookstores, and there are three art galleries, and just terrific, you know, nationally known restaurants here, and fantastic music, just great, great music venues. It's just, it's a good place to be, to live.
Wow. I think the Chamber of Commerce would really be proud of you, Tom. That was a great pitch. You make me want to go there on vacation.
Well, come on down, Vic. We'd love to entertain you.
That sounds great. The book is The Tilted World. Tom Franklin and Beth Ann Finley wrote it. They join us together on the phone, and this wasn't easy to do. I've been talking to your publicist for months trying to get this to work so that we could all be together on the same schedule. So I'm so glad that this was able to finally happen.
Oh, so are we. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the problem is that if it's one of us, it's easy to get both of us to pin us both down with between kids and work and everything else. It is really quite a feat.
So is today, I know we're doing this, taping this on a holiday, is today a day when neither of you had to teach?
No.
We have a faculty meeting in probably 25, 30 minutes, and Beth Ann teaches in a couple of hours after that.
Oh, my. Okay, well, it's great we were able to squeeze this in. Are either of you working on a new project right now, a new novel, a new poem? What's up with that?
Well, right now we're still on book tour, so I think our energies are focused on that, but we are talking about what might come next and thinking that we'd like to do another novel together.
And we're both missing the act of writing again. It's been a number of months now since we've really been able to sit down and work on anything, so we're getting antsy. It's time to get started back to work again.
Yep.
I think the last time I talked to you, Tom, I can remember something about how you wrote a lot of, I believe it was Crooked Letter, in Brazil while Beth Ann was on a Fulbright down there?
That's right. I wrote probably 80, 85% of that book down there. She gave me the incredible gift of 5 months of 8-hour days with nothing to do but write. I'd never had that in my life, and suddenly I had just, frankly, enough time to write a novel. And you know, with that 5 months, I was able to finish what I'd been trying to do for about 5 or 6 years at that point.
And being in Brazil, you were really able to focus on that world back home.
Well, the truth is that, you know, I was taken away from my distractions. Oxford, as we have just been saying, is a great place to be, and I have lots of friends here, and there are always readers coming through and bands coming through. So writing, which is not easy for me, it's suddenly I have ways and reasons not to do it. You know, my friend's in town, I'll skip working today and go see him or her. Down in Brazil, where I couldn't speak the language, I really couldn't get to the bars, and if I could get there, I couldn't really get the drinks that I wanted, so I had nothing to do but sit and write.
Yeah, for years before we did our Fulbright, I kept saying, hey, Tommy, do you want to say some Portuguese? Or, no, you, here's this great book that'll teach you Portuguese, and I could never get him to study it, and then when we got there, he couldn't speak a word, but the novel got written.
Yeah, you couldn't even watch TV, could you?
No, once in a while we'd find something like dodgeball in English, and that would be a real celebration, but mostly it was all Portuguese.
Uh-huh. Well, this is a really interesting book. I can't remember ever reading a book quite like it. I know people always want to try to categorize books. I think the only thing that comes to mind for me is this is a mystery.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, thank you. Well, we enjoy the mystery genre, and even though that wasn't our primary goal, we do like a book that has both good sentences and makes you want to keep reading because you care about the characters, you care about what happens to them.
You know, I'd say it has mystery, you know, in it. But it's also an historical novel. It's also a love story. Mm. It's an adventure story. It's a Southern story. I mean, you know, I think it fits into a lot of different categories. But certainly there is a mystery at its core. You know, it could be considered a crime novel. Our friend Otto Penzler, who is kind of the don of the crime world says that a crime novel is a novel that is set into motion by a crime, as is this one. So it fits into that category as well. Everything but science fiction, I think. You know, it kind of works, or fantasy.
I've met Otto. He's the proprietor of, is it the Mysterious Bookshop in New York City?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a character.
He has his own imprint now, so he's publishing novels.
Well, I see where Dennis Lehane gave you a very nice plug for this book. He says, "A new novel from Tom Franklin is always a reason to get excited, but a novel from Franklin and Fennelly is just cause to throw a block party."
That's so great, isn't it?
Isn't that a nice blurb?
It really is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, he's very generous.
And this cover is also quite well done. I don't know how much input you get into that sort of thing, but I am assuming this is a real picture.
Yeah, it is. It is a real picture of the flood.
But we get almost no input. They show us and say, "What do we think?" And we say, "Yeah, we like it, or you know, we don't think it works so well."
Uh-huh.
But this one, we both thought worked quite well.
The book is The Tilted World. Tom Franklin and Beth Ann Fennelly wrote it, and they've joined us on the program today. And I know you got to get it ready for that faculty meeting and various other things. I hear that your youngin has joined the group again.
And you found me hiding in the back bedroom.
So we really appreciate your time today. And when you finally do get this book publicity thing put to bed and you're ready to recoup and reform, what are you planning on doing as far as are you really going to start working on another novel together, or is this just something that you're gestating?
Well, we're just in the planning stages, I guess, right, Tommy?
Yeah, but we're definitely talking about it, and I'm certainly thinking about it. I can't speak for Beth Ann, but it's absolutely on my mind a lot of the time now.
Wow. Well, I'll look forward to that, because this is one of my favorite books of the year. I'm just now going through my stacks trying to identify the ones. I also write for the Cox, Ohio newspaper, so at the end of the year I try to put together my favorite fiction and nonfiction lists, and this definitely looks like a keeper on the fiction list this year.
Oh, yay! Thank you, Vic.
Cool.
That's
Thank
good
you.
News.
So I'll send that along to your publicist when the time comes. I'm just now going through the piles. So I'm pretty sure you made the cut on this one. I mean, I just love this story.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Vic.
Well, we really appreciate your time today, and I'll let you get ready for all these other activities, and we'll move along. I've got two more interviews to record this afternoon, so thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Vic.
Thanks so much.
Our guests have been Tom Franklin, Beth Ann Fennelly, and what's your son's name?
Nolan Franklin, age 2.
Nolan Franklin.
Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Nolan Franklin. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. "150 years ago, the Civil War was raging. And as we have marked that anniversary, many books have been coming out over the last 4 years. Just now, a book came out that is set in 1864. It begins in the Battle of the Wilderness. The book is called Nostalgia. This is a gripping Civil War novel, written by Dennis McFarland. We'll be talking to him about it next week in the Book Nook. And a little bit about baseball. They did play baseball during the Civil War. That's the Book Nook on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.